Welcome to The Word at Westminster, a podcast with talks, studies, interviews, sermons, and more from Westminster Church in Barrie, Canada. It's about learning and living God's Word. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the podcast. And we have a special guest today that, and she's going to speak to an issue that is close to many of our hearts, certainly really close to my heart. Her name is Christy Thomas. She is a mom. She is a writer. She's been involved in ministry most of her life, and she is a family discipleship coach. She believes that every Christian parent, including those who feel unsure at first, did you hear that? Including those who feel unsure at first, can nurture deep faith in their kids through little habits that add up over time. The resources she produces, both online and in book form, help us with this critical task. So, Christy, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really exciting.
So people are listening or watching, and some of them are tentative and nervous. They've seen the topic and like, oh, is this something I should tune into? They know it's so important, but many of them feel unequipped, or they feel unsupported, or maybe overwhelmed. What is the first thing that you want to say to them?
Well, I would say you're not alone. There are a lot of people. I talk to so many parents who feel the exact same, unequipped, unsupported, overwhelmed. Right. Even people who have been doing this for a long time are thinking, am I doing it right? And I think people have always felt unequipped, unsupported, or overwhelmed. So the first thing I guess I would say is you're not alone, but not just alone in like the people world, but also you're not alone spiritually. Because, you know, the Apostle Paul says, it's not that we think we're qualified to do anything on our own. Our qualification comes from God, and he has enabled us to be ministers of the new covenant. It doesn't come from ourselves at all. It comes from God. So one of my favorite Bible stories that I like to tell adults is that the one where Peter and John, they've just healed a lame guy in the temple, and they've been called in to face the Sanhedrin. And they're like, why have you healed this guy? And, you know, they have their conversation. And then afterwards, Peter and John go away, and the Sanhedrin says, that was interesting. And Acts 4:13 says, when they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized that they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished. And they took note that these men had been with Jesus. So you're not alone because you have Jesus with you, and Jesus left his Holy Spirit for us. So hopefully that's encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. What's more important than that, right? Yeah. I like the chart that you have on page 37. And for those watching, we'll put that up on the screen, showing how much discipling will happen of your kids if you wait until you know enough. And of course, for those of you who can see the chart, nothing will happen if you wait that long until you know enough. Why do we feel this pressure to be experts? And why is it so important to simply start small, trusting God?
I think we feel like we have to be experts because everybody's an expert in something. You look at all the YouTube videos, and there's 16-year-olds that are experts apparently on stuff. Or we read the books, the parenting books that claim, you know, you do these things and your kids are going to turn out right. And then they don't. Or you think, well, my kids are not turning out like that. So the pressure, and also the pressure just feels high. Like if we really believe in this stuff, we believe this has eternal consequences. So, and then we hear stats, which we can talk about later if you want, the stats that seem to indicate that we're failing. So why is it important that we start small? Because honestly, it's the only way to get a job done.
Right.
Really, we have to start with little things. You have to start the snowball rolling somewhere. And little steps are important because they're powerful when you pair them with God's power. So think of all the times in the Bible when God took something little and he made it into something big. So 5 loaves and 2 fish feeding thousands of people, or someone's just a tiny amount of faith and God says, that's enough. We're going to grow you from there. One of my favorite examples for thinking about like starting small, and I talk about this in the book, is that after the period of the exile, the Israelites have come back and they started to rebuild their homes and they started rebuilding the temple. And then all the nations around them, like the Samaritans and the other nations around them, are like, wait, you cannot rebuild this temple. And they send an email to the king, the king of kings at the time. And they're like, hey, these guys are starting a temple. They're going to start a riot. You probably shouldn't let them. And so they get this edict that says, stop building the temple. And so they leave it for a lot of years. And then one night, a young priest named Zechariah gets his dream, and God says, start building my temple. And he says, do not despise these small beginnings. The Lord rejoices to see the work begin. God knows that you built a temple, you know, stone by stone. It doesn't just pop up overnight. And just like you have to, they had to build that temple. They just had to start stone by stone. And I'm sure even like the stones weren't, you couldn't order them on Amazon, right? Like you had to go and get your stones. You had to go and find where you're getting your stones from. You had to chop them out, you know, all the, you know, stone masonry stuff that I know nothing about. But it's a slow process. But God said, I rejoice to see the work begin. So that's why it's important to just start small, start somewhere. And we just trust that God will be with us in the process.
I feel like we know that intuitively in other parts of our lives, you know, whether it's, you know, you're picking up a new skill. One of my kids right now is starting a new sport. And so, okay, there's this one thing you do, and then there's this other thing you do, and you build on that. But we seem reluctant maybe to, you know, transfer that over to our lives of faith and our discipleship. Maybe we hear about Mother Teresa, or we hear about Family X doing all these sorts of things, and we're just like, that's just not us, and we don't start it. But we just need to, you know, appropriate that to our own circumstance as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things parents do is they hear an expert, as you said, or some random person online. And yeah, you're right. There's so many, quote, experts out there. And sometimes you want to say like, hey, how's it going in your own household while you're pretending to be an expert? But anyway, you know, they say that you need to do exactly X, Y, or Z. So if you want to be successful, and there can never be any flexibility in your devotional practices, you always have to do A, B, and C. But you talk about the importance of being open to change, and which is one of the things I really appreciated. And I've read, you know, I've got three kids of my own, and I've been a pastor for 17 years. I've talked to a lot of people, and I've read a lot of faith at home books, parenting, discipleship books. And one of the things that I think that I appreciate about your book is you talk about this more than other people. So this is something that's really helpful. So so in terms of the change, can you explain why, and perhaps also provide some examples of being open to change as you kind of bring this into your house?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to remember that there's no silver bullet for family discipleship. Sometimes some of those books that I read made me feel like, you know, if I didn't do it this way, then I was doing it wrong. But look at God's children. Even the most faithful parents have kids that walk away because kids have to make their own choices. So there's no silver bullet. So we also have to be open to change, because otherwise we risk sticking with something that's not working. So as a kind of a sad example, actually, somebody that I met had enrolled her teenagers in a catechism class, and the oldest one is about 20 years old now. And partly as a result of the way that catechism class was taught, she's walked away from her faith. And so she is now has her son in the catechism class. And I was talking to her and she says, you know, I want him to finish because this is really important to me, but she can see his faith breaking. And it breaks my heart, because I think if you're so convinced of this one thing and you're not willing to change, you're going to lose that time with both of your children. And there's going to be probably a little bit of resentment in that relationship with you, not just in the relationship with God, but that you made them do something that you thought was important and they thought was awful. And so like, you know, if we're open to change, and I'm praying for this for her, that, you know, which she would recognize that what she wants maybe needs to step aside and say, okay, we're going to pull you out of this. Maybe we're going to study this together. Even if I don't feel equipped, maybe we're just going to find a better group that's allowing you to ask the kind of questions that you want to ask. That's so important. So maybe on a more positive note for when it comes to change, I've always been kind of not really into apologetics. I feel like I had some high school friends that were super into apologetics, and it really rubbed me the wrong way, because they always were like so certain, and this is the way it is, and this is the proof. And I'm like, things don't really sound like proof to me. Anyway, I just like kind of the feel of people who kind of punch you with apologetics, I didn't love. So one of my sons a couple years ago, though, he said to me one day, like, I don't know if I believe what I believe because I believe it or because you believe it. And I realized, okay, I'm going to maybe need to backpedal on my dislike of apologetics a little bit. So I found some kid-friendly apologetics resources to use, and I read them with my kids. And because I was reading them, you know, if there were things where I was like, well, you know, that doesn't actually prove anything, that, you know, that maybe that's kind of a roundabout argument or something. We have these conversations together, but I did feel like my faith was actually growing as a result of these, and their faith grew. And it's led to just some continued open conversations as my teenagers grow. One of my oldest likes to like watch YouTube videos with kind of talking about some of the different philosophical arguments for or against God, and he's brought some to us. He's like, you know, I really find this one compelling. I don't find this argument compelling. And I just think it's created more interesting conversations. And I'm glad that I swallowed my pride on that and went and, you know, dug out those resources and was willing to do that.
Yeah, well, and I guess that will change with different ages and stages with the kids too, right? Because when they're young, that might be one thing. But as they grow, there's an openness. But also the parent also needs to be open to the fact that, okay, as they grow and develop, I need to be listening or paying attention to what they're saying as opposed to just imposing something. And they're in high school now. They're talking with different people and having different issues.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, my examples are both of like high school, you know, junior high kids, but those kind of things happen when they're younger too. We have to be open to change. What if, you know, I have this perfect devotional in mind for my 4-year-old and it's totally going over their heads and they are just squirmy and complaining the whole time. Mm-hmm. Well, we'd be there to say, okay, just sit down and listen and we'll just get through it. Or would it be to say, okay, let's find something maybe that's a little bit more interactive and to just kind of switch gears there. Or maybe we're just going to pray, you know, for the next couple of months, we're just going to pray at night until we find something that they actually like. I mean, I've talked to a lot of parents who's like 4 or 5-year-old boys are like, I don't want to do this. I'm not interested in this. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I tell them is just pray about it. Like stop doing what you're doing for a little bit, pray about it, pray that God will soften their hearts, and then look for something that's going to engage them on their level.
Yeah. I was just meeting with someone else this morning about something else, and they were saying that their child, you know, I think it's, I don't think it's Lifeway, it's Life Church. Anyway, it's one of the Bible apps, but there's a kid's version, and there's like, you can go through the stories and it's like these cartoon animations and you're kind of answering questions about it and the kids loves it. And it's so interesting in this kind of like just an engagement from where this person is at. That's not the only thing, but that's a part of it. And then someone else, there's a young person that I know who Adventures in Odyssey has been so important to them. They know more Bible than most adults that I know, but because that's something
that was me.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me. Yes. But also we're in this golden age of resources.
Sometimes I think that actually causes problems because it leaves us with a little bit of that resource paralysis. But yeah, that was one of the things I loved listening to stories.
Yeah.
I didn't do Bible studies when I was a kid, teenager, really, but I listened to so much Adventure in Odyssey that it's just
goodness.
Sucked me in and really worked in my heart.
Yeah, it's like, you know, every once in a while, like, oh, that time with Elijah. I'm like, how did you know that? Yeah. Anyway, so I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that in the 2000-year history-ish of the modern church, Sunday schools are a fairly modern invention. And you talk about this in the book. I think a lot of people would also be surprised about the main spiritual influences in a child's life. Could you just take a few moments and talk about those influences?
For sure. Well, yeah, I was surprised to learn that Sunday school wasn't really a thing for spiritual education until about the 1870s. So we've had about 150 years of Sunday school. So clearly, you know, faith was being passed on to children before that.
Yeah. How?
Christianity didn't just, I know, I don't know how without those teenage Sunday school teachers, right? But so there was a study, multiple studies done. And one of them was done in about 2007, and it was a Lifeway study. And it's the one that people always quote, you know, only 1/3 of our young adults are going to be Christians when they grow up. You know, we're losing 2/3 of our young adults. But then there was a second study that was done around that same time period. And they looked, instead of looking at any teenager who'd been in church for at least a year, you know, while they were a teenager, they looked at teenagers who were in church, but also lived in families where families were, you know, not perfect, but they're talking about faith at home. Maybe they're praying or reading the Bible. Right. You know, it didn't look the same in every family. But 82% of those teenagers remained in the faith as they became young adults, or at least remained, you know, going to church, which is kind of the only metric that we really super observable, right? So there's a huge difference between 33% and 82%. And the difference is, you know, the one study was looking at any teenager who was, you know, just going to youth group or something for a year, as opposed to teenagers who were in families who were talking about this. So there is study after study that shows that moms, dads, grandmas, and grandpas have so much more influence than even a pastor, a youth leader, a Sunday school teacher, as ranked by the kids themselves. Not, you know, this is not like me going out, you know, making some sort of sociological study,
right?
You know, with a bias, but yeah, the teenagers themselves are saying, yeah, my mom, my dad, these are the people that have had the most influence in my faith growth.
And these are regular moms and dads. These aren't people necessarily with seminary degrees. These are just people living out their faith. Yeah.
Absolutely.
One of the things I loved about that, I was really interested. You know, I love this conversation and sharing these ideas and promoting this book with people, not just because I'm a pastor, but because I have a personal interest in this as well. I really found this interesting. And, you know, this is in the book, page 17, talking about the Lifeway 2017 study, the 15 characteristics of children who continue to choose Christ as adults. So people like going through, you know, their faith, they're into their kind of late teens, 20s. And the most influential characteristics, and you list four of them in the book: reading the Bible regularly, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Praying regularly, makes sense. Serving in church regularly, and primarily listening to Christian music. Now, the things that stood out to me there is serving in church regularly. It wasn't just attending. They're doing something. So they're kind of getting plugged in, and they're maybe helping, serving, maybe in the tech booth, maybe a helper at a VBS or a youth group, something. And then primarily listening to Christian music. I was kind of interested to hear that. Did that surprise you, or is that something that, based on your own experience, you're seeing that bear up as well?
I would say that was the one that kind of surprised me most. You know, it surprised me, but also we can kind of see it. You've heard people talking about like the influence of music in your life. Mm-hmm. But it did say in, like, if you look at the actual study, they say that the impact of secular music on a child has less negative impact than the positive impact of, you know, having some sacred music in your life.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, you're listening to Taylor Swift some of the time and you're going to go to hell. Like, That's not what they're saying. They're saying, you know, just having this as, you know, this music that points us to God as kind of, you know, a good chunk of what you're imbibing as far as music can really help.
Right. You know, so like, it's a part of the mix.
Yeah, it's part of the mix. Exactly. I like that.
Okay. So your book, obviously called Little Habits, Big Faith, you really focus on those little habits. What do you mean by little? Like, can you give some suggestions? Because I think people are probably listening. They're coming along with this. This makes sense. I get this. And this is something I can do. Can you talk more about little, and what do you mean?
Oh, I mean really little, like almost absurdly little. Because in order to actually see sustainable change in our lives, it has to be really easy to do. You know, we hear about all these people who make these big sweeping changes, but anytime I try to make a big sweeping change, it doesn't work and it doesn't stick. Because it's through these little changes that things actually change. So any new, you know, habit you want to try, it has to be realistic. So it has to actually be a good fit for your family. You can't try and do an inductive Bible study with your 2-year-old. Right? It's not going to be a good fit. It has to be specific, like something you can see in your head, not just like, we're going to, you know, read the Bible together. Well, what does that look like?
Right.
Very specifically. And it also has to be very easy. So BJ Fogg is the author of a book called Tiny Habits. And he basically says, he shows this little graph in his book that shows that the easier something is, the more likely we're actually going to do it, because it takes away the need for having any motivation. So we just need very little motivation to do easy things, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm thinking I want to read the Bible with my kids, I want to make it really specific. So, you know, what do I mean? Okay, well, maybe what I mean is that I want to read a section from a children's Bible storybook at supper. And then you want to make it even more realistic. So you want to read a really short, highly engaging Bible storybook. You're not going to pick the one with the, you know, the least amount of pictures and the most amount of text. You're going to find the one that is the most realistic for your family to actually get through. And then you even want to make it even easier. So maybe it's not even a Bible storybook. Maybe you're going to read a single Bible verse at night. You know, after you pray for your food, you're going to read a single Bible verse while everybody else digs in. And it's just, those little habits have a lot of value on their own, But often you can also think about it as kind of like cracking the door open on that time of day and on your spiritual life. So if that's like something that's really shut in your family, you just don't read the Bible together, or you don't
Right.
pray together, or you don't memorize scripture, you don't listen to worship music. If you pick something really tiny, it kind of cracks open that heavy door and makes those bigger changes feel so much more possible.
Is there something with your own kids that, you know, based on what you just said, they will reflect back and, oh, we used to do that. And when we started to do that, that was really meaningful to me.
I feel like because I've been doing this for so long, I don't know if there's anything that we've like super changed recently. I hope that they'll look back and say, you know, the times that we read the Bible together at breakfast was really meaningful for me. But that was something that I started when they were still pretty small. It was a struggle for me to get started, but I would say they were like, the oldest was 6 years old when I was working through how to actually make that happen. So we've been reading the Bible at breakfast together, at least on school days, for 10 years. Is that possible? At least 10 years now. Yeah. And so that's going to have an impact on them. I hope they enjoy it. I mean, most of the time they enjoy it, right? Sometimes there's some grumpiness. We just rolled out of bed and we're not feeling like participating right now.
That's true for
overall,
all of us.
Exactly.
That's true for all of us.
Overall. Yeah,
so that's an example of kind of habit stacking. I think you talk about that in the book where, you know, here's something we're going to the table. And so we're going to do this while we're already at the table. So it's not like you're creating new space that didn't exist before and time. You're taking a time that you're together and you're kind of doing something to supplement it. But the fact that you go to the table means it's going to happen.
Yeah. And actually I can't go to the table now for breakfast and have all my children there and not feel like, oh, we better read the Bible together. Even maybe if it's not breakfast. So even in summer, we're not really eating breakfast together anymore. Cause you know, I've got teenagers. Just
summer, man.
Oh. Maybe I'm sleeping in too. Right. So,
yeah.
But you know, if we're managed to all be at the table for lunchtime, I think, oh, like, it just feels so ingrained in me. I'm like, oh, why don't we just pull out a quick devotional and read something now, at least.
Yeah.
Because it just feels almost wrong to not do it together.
Yeah. I remember one time it just came to mind. And I've done this since the kids were really young, but I remember they were pretty young. I don't know how old one of my kids was when this happened, but I would make the habit of saying the ironic blessing, you know, the Lord bless you and keep you at bedtime. And one night, one of my kids, after I did that, said, now let me do it to you, Daddy. And they did it to me. And I thought, that's so interesting because they just heard it from me saying it year after year after year. And then they wanted to do it. So it's like, that's also, you know, it's nice. It made me feel great. And they are doing something. But also, it's also encouragement, like these little things, like they seep in, like they make an impact over time, right? In terms of the little habits, I just want to tell people in my encouragement for you to get this book, you've got a series of appendices at the back. Appendix A, ideas for little habits. And there's like these lists of little things, which is great because you've talked about a few here, but at the same time, you've got some. And it's just so nice that there's so many of them, because just by reading through the list, you get a sense, oh, you know, that one, and that one, that might work for me, or that one other one might not. But so I appreciate that you've taken the time to put that out there, because it's really going to be very practical and doable for people. I know a lot of parents who have a spouse who doesn't believe. How can these parents encourage little habits for a big faith when they don't have the support that other couples might, or at least from their spouse?
You know, it's absolutely trickier. I have some friends that where their spouse isn't a believer, and it does cause some problems. But for the most part, I think that little things are the least likely to step on somebody else's toes too, right? And you can, I mean, part of that is just like praying that God is going to bring your spouse into faith. But also, you know, we just start these little things out of faithfulness to God, because our spouse is not our God. Our spouse is our partner, but ultimately we're responsible to God, not to our spouse. So, but I'm not saying, you know, you run roughshod over your spouse and like, okay, well, we're going to read the Bible now and you're going to hate it, but you're going to sit there and listen. But maybe you can do some things when you're alone with your children, and that's okay. And just slowly share scripture with them or pray a blessing over them. And, you know, there's no guarantees with anything like this, right? I'm not saying that when you do that, your kids are going to magically become Christians or that your spouse is going to, but I feel like you're slowly going to change the culture in your home when you just keep tipping your children's faces back toward God.
Yeah. Again and again. The, you know, Puritan writer Matthew Henry, you know, he's got this book called A Church in the House, which I didn't know about until recently. So I picked it up. I thought, that's great. You know, it's kind of like faith at home practices in the 17th century, clearly a different time than us. But one of the things I was struck by is that he's got this section on distraction and busyness. And I'm like, that's the 1700s. He's talking about it. I'm right. Like, dude,
well,
you should check it out.
Out their living.
Yeah, they did. It was a very different time. But the distraction and busyness, how do people fight against that? And I know that's a larger question, and I didn't warn you about this question, so I'm just throwing it in there. But when people come to you, you're a family discipleship coach. When people come to you and say, we just feel so distracted and busy, what's the first thing you need to kind of say to them to kind of maybe kind of shift their thinking a little bit?
I think that you could just invite God into that. Like, it feels like a lot of the distraction, the busyness are things that we can't necessarily avoid when we're raising kids, and, you know, we've got to get them to their sports. And so I feel like a lot of times we would like to just say, well, just stop being distracted and busy, you know, just take things out of your schedule, but that may not be realistic. So let's invite God into what we're already doing. Let's say that you are really busy driving your kids to a lot of different events and functions. Well, could you invite God into those drives? Could you say, maybe we'll listen to worship music instead of, you know, everyone plugging into their own devices? Could we take this time and read the Bible together? I have a friend who's super busy. I think she was driving her kids to like 3 different schools. So she was spending 3 hours in the drop-off and pickup lines. But her youngest was the one who was in the car with her the longest. So after she dropped off her older 2 boys, she would spend some time praying and reading a devotional with her youngest while they were waiting for his school to start. So she was able to kind of redeem that time. So there is something in your day where you are with your kids and you can talk to God about it and say, hey, God, like, where's a time when you want to redeem, where I could bring you into this? God is not going to say, no, I don't want you to do that. Like, I'm pretty sure he's going to give you some ideas of things that you could try.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like sometimes often churches are looked at as places to do the religious formation. And sometimes churches might be guilty of doing too much or maybe not equipping. So is there something that pastors and elders of churches can do to encourage that faith in the home more, other than saying, do it?
Well, I think just the focus on small habits and integrating God into your day, inviting him into what you're already doing, can really help. I think a lot of it is just the language that we use around it. Instead of just saying, do it, let's give some examples. Maybe you need to bring several different families up to share with the other families and say, this is what this looks like in our home. And somebody else would say, well, we don't do that, but this is what it looks like in our home. And when you start seeing the variety of how these look in different homes, you stop feeling like you have to know it all or do it all in order to make a difference. And you realize, oh, like, God wants to work with my family in my unique circumstances.
What happens when a parent, let's say, are engaging, and you use the example of a child wanting to get a bit more into apologetics and maybe philosophically looking at some of the defenses of the faith and that sort of thing, and a parent is at home and they're like, okay, the Trinity and Jesus dies on the cross, that atones for sin. What's the relationship between the Son and the Father? There's something that's getting into it. It's like, wow, this is just, whoa, beyond me. How does a parent go about addressing that? Because sometimes I get those questions, like a parent be like, hey, I just got this question, what is going on? Or can you talk to us after the service on Sunday? But other than going straight to the pastor, which is fine sometimes, or an elder, or, you know, a wise grandma, what do people do? What do parents do in that next step when they're just like, this is out of my depth?
Well, maybe you've got to tell your kid, I don't know, and be okay with that. I think there's an aspect of humility in that, and that maybe mom and dad don't have all the answers. You could say something like, I don't know, but let's find out together. And, you know, you can ask your pastor, or there's a ton of resources out there. Maybe you want to look for resources created by your denomination that you're in, it depends on what your own preferences are for that, right? Because you can find a lot of weird stuff on the internet. Let me just say.
Are you serious?
So you can look for, maybe your pastor has a list of resources that are good to use, or maybe you can ask your children's ministry director for some resources, because maybe they don't know the answers either, but they said, oh, I heard this book. This other parent said this was so great to help with this question. Those kind of like, let's just talk to each other and ask for help. Ask other parents, what have you done in this kind of circumstance? And you're going to probably be inundated with resources, and then just pick one. Go from there.
Yeah. I really like the honesty about just saying, hey, I don't know. Let's find out together. Because, you know, if you're not an expert, it doesn't help if you pretend you're an expert. And just sort of, finding some more resources out there. Yeah, absolutely. Do you find that there's certain practices that tend to hit more with boys than girls? Or they tend to be the same? Or is it just too individual? You know, are personalities too unique to really kind of make a generalization like that?
That is interesting. So I only have boys in my own home, but I did spend a lot of years in children's ministry. And, you know, there are always kids that break the stereotypes, but overall the boys were busier than the girls, and the girls were happier to, you know, sit and color than the boys were. But there are so many ways to engage boys, especially little ones. You can have them acting things out. And this works for boys and girls. You can have them acting out the Bible stories. You can have them creating Lego while you're reading the Bible, or painting or drawing, or let them roll around on the floor and don't be worried about that.
Yeah, it's like, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just a matter of letting go of what we think our perfect family discipleship moment looks like. I always imagined, I don't know why this, but like dad with a guitar and mom with the Bible open, and the kids are like, ooh, tell me more about Jesus. And that is not a real family, right? So just be okay with the mess. And sometimes it's going to be great. Sometimes it's going to be short, and it's going to be 30 seconds. And you're going to be like, let's stop while we're ahead. And sometimes you'll be able to go longer. And then sometimes you'll go longer and realize, oh, I need to wrap this up because now I've lost them. You know, it's not perfect. It's
and that's okay. And that's okay. Yeah. When you were describing that, I was picturing that scene from The Sound of Music where the captain is in the room and he does this duet with Liesel, I think, except instead of like some random song, it's like a hymn. I'm like, yes, that would be amazing. okay. So we all want good things for our kids. You know, as I said, mine are now 12, 14, 16. There's a lot of ideas around what is a flourishing family. You know, we hear the phrase culturally popular, healthy, happy. I think busyness is an idol of our time. In your view, what does a flourishing family look like?
That is so hard to answer, because if you get specific about behaviors or outside metrics, you're going to be wrong with some families. Right. So I think it's just a family where God is involved. And if you took God out, your family would not be the same. It would look different. That's a pretty broad definition, but I mean, because families are all so different, but I mean, I'd be curious, do you have a definition? What would a flourishing family look like for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, God at the center, certainly makes a lot of sense, and where you're growing in discipleship together. So yeah, it's hard to say this is something that's going to apply to all families, but you know, certainly him at the center. And I think that, you know, I know it's a buzzword today, so I, you know, I'm a bit slow to use it, but you know, authentic. So we want to be authentic in our discipleship. So if I want my kids to be reading the Bible, they need to see me doing it and me praying. And when we have a problem in our life, oh, we're so worried, you know, there's a big test coming up, or so-and-so said something at school, you know what, let's pray about that and talk about that. How are we going to respond to that instead of react? So I would say, just God at the center and actually trying to follow Jesus. And then we're going to fail. And sometimes, hey, it'll be a great day, banner moment, hills are alive. But other moments when we fail, admitting mistakes. So I would just say authenticity around following. I think that's probably what I would say.
Yeah. And if you took God out of any of those conversations, your family would look completely different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
But that's how you can tell. Yeah.
That is. So everyone, I just want to thank you, Christy, for this time. This has been a great conversation. I appreciated the book. And just as a reminder, everybody, it's called Little Habits, Big Faith. And I'll put a graphic up there. And again, the subtitle, because you really need to know the subtitle, How Simple Practices Help Your Family Grow in Jesus. So I encourage you to pick that up. I'm going to be encouraging people at my congregation to pick it up, but also people out there in the wider stratosphere listening or watching the podcast. So, Christy, how can people get connected to you? And are there any projects that you're working on that you want to share with people?
Sure. Well, the best way to get connected to me is to find me on my website, which is very similar to the book, but a little different, littleshootsdeeproots.com. So right. If you're on Instagram, I'm also at littleshootsdeeproots. I'm kind of on Facebook. I don't feel like most of my people are on Facebook anymore. And I'm on YouTube, but you can find all those links on my website as well, like where to kind of find me online. I have a podcast called Little Shoots, Deep Roots as well. So if you just remember Little Shoots, Deep Roots, you can find me. And I'm actually working on a series of Bible studies for ages 6 to 10 right now. This is something that I never did with my kids because all I could find was like ones that felt like school. And So I kind of created some of my own stuff. So I've been contracted to write a series of fun, easy Bible studies for ages 6 to 10. They won't be coming out, honestly, for a couple of years. I just started writing them. But actually, on another note, I have a book for adults coming out. It's a devotional on gentleness. That one's coming out in March. So I'm a little nervous because I feel like our world does not want to be gentle right now.
Yeah. Well, it's a perfect timing for it, it sounds like.
I know, I guess.
And there's another one of your books behind you on the shelf. Is that
Oh, yeah. I have some picture books. Quince Promise Rock is one of them. I have family devotionals. I have one on the fruit of the spirit and a mother-son prayer journal. If you just go to my website, you can see the list of books and the podcast and links to socials. All the things are there.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. And let me just end with this quote that you use from Ryan Coatney. Raising Christian kids is always a miracle, but it's never an accident.